which I just did. So let me do that again. This is Jay Michaels. I've become a Zoom pro in pressing record and interviewing some amazing people in the independent arts scene. But we're going live today. This is the first time for me. So pardon me if I seem, what's the word I'm thinking of, stupid. But here we do. I look different live. You could all tell me if I look different live. Okay, enough humor. Let's get right to the point here. We are in a world right now where the very air we breathe is our enemy. And we can't just wait for the doctor to call. We can't just take two aspirin and see what happens in the morning. We need to think about ourselves now. Body, mind, and spirit, and how we can stay, and I'm not going to say healthy, I'm not going to stay fit, I'm not going to do any of those nice commercial words. I'm simply going to say to stay well. And there are methods that are centuries, eons, millennia old that we've forgotten about, that we really shouldn't, because their power is unmistakable and totally recognizable. With me today to discuss Tarot, an ancient art that is much maligned, if you will. Now, you recognize her as a cabaret chanteuse. You recognize her as a Broadway technician and designer on Off-Broadway. You recognize her as an artistic director of theatrical companies. You recognize her as a recording artist, as a teacher, as so many other things. But did you know that Mary Elizabeth Macari has been studying, charting, and working with all forms of homeopathic healing for 40 years. That ranges from tarot to herbalism to aromatherapy and beyond. So I'm really thrilled that she can be here with us. Mary, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for being part of this.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, pardon me, but most of our guests, including myself, our entrance into the tarot was probably in some really macabre movie where some strange character in a hood somewhere or with an accent pulled the death card and all of a sudden the movie got good. But that's not tarot. Tarot becomes a device in these films.
Right.
Share with us about you. Let's start with you. Tell us about you and your journey, and let's go right into what the tarot really is.
So the tarot for me, I don't say tarot, but either way is fine. It's good either way. But I started learning how to read cards from my grandmother, my father's mother, who was Italian, of Italian heritage. And she had learned this from her mother, but we didn't use tarot cards. She didn't use tarot cards. They used playing deck, which is still part of what we consider part of the tarot deck, which is much bigger than our regular plain deck. The tarot deck has 72 cards, regular deck has 52. So there's 20 other cards, 21 other cards in the tarot deck that are different. But anyway, she taught me then how to read with those cards, pretty much. This is not something my Irish Catholic mother took well, so it was kind of forbidden to use this.
Right.
She also taught me to read palms, because my great-grandmother was what they called a neighborhood strega in Park Slope, Brooklyn, meaning that she was somebody you'd go to for herbal mixtures or for fortune telling, or, you know, I think my husband's cheating on me, give me a spell kind of things, to other Italian immigrants in that area. So anyway, fast forward about 14 years, I'm in a shopping mall with my friend and I see a deck of tarot cards, and I get them and I take them home and I read the book and I start working with them and loving them. And then again, my mother finds this out and takes them in the backyard and burns them in the barbecue, because she thought for sure I was going to have, you know, a thing like The Exorcist and get possessed by demons. Right. So, okay. Immediately thereafter, I find out the manufacturer of the tarot deck, because I still had a piece of it, go there to Manhattan by myself at 14 or 15 and buy a deck. They thought I was crazy. I'm like, I don't know where else to get this. So I went right to the manufacturer's place, the distributor. So I had my own deck and I kept it under my mattress and I kept working with it from then. So I'd say about 14 or 15 is when I started to really work on the cards and understand the cards and deal with the cards on a regular basis. Yeah. So that's the history. And I've been doing it ever since then, reading cards more and more and more. I have about, 100 or more decks now that I've saved up, and many, many, many books, and a lot of other training in different places that's brought me to this place. And now I teach Tarot, beginner Tarot to people online now, on Zoom. And it's pretty successful there too. And I've also taught privately and in person. And I read cards for people as well.
There's the word. There's the word I was waiting for. You just saved me 10 minutes of trying to get there. How does one read the Tarot? Now, we see the, oh, and this means this and this means it. How does one properly read the Tarot?
You know, there's different schools of thought. Some people believe that the Tarot is an opening to psychic ability, which it is and can be. Some people believe the Tarot is a pictorial representation of the person who's asking questions, mind or spirit, or some people believe that a spirit guide is speaking through them. There's many different ways people will say how you read the cards. How I read the cards, though, I don't believe you have to be a psychic to be a tarot reader, and I don't believe all tarot readers are psychic, right? So I believe the first thing you need to do is just take a look at those cards and really understand their history and their symbolism in each of the cards. So if you want to read them. Now, if you want just to have readings, that's a whole nother story. But if you want to read the cards, learn how to read the cards, you have to sit with these cards and go through them each individually. And because in each one of those cards is tons of symbolism from Egypt, from the Hebrew Kabbalah, the Jewish mystic school of Kabbalah. There's stuff in there from Western magical traditions. There's stuff in there from just color representation, numerology, astrological representation. There's a lot of things in the cards. Now, not all cards are this way. There's one particular deck that was created in the early 20th century, the Smith Rider Waite deck. And that deck is the deck that a lot of other decks are based upon. And that has a lot of symbolism. So I always say to people, go there and look at that deck. And there's innumerable places to look up meanings online about the deck. And that would be the first step I take for a new student, would be just to take a look at the decks, look at all these symbolisms. Remember that if you do start to read tarot, you're going to open up yourself to wanting to study astrology, wanting to study Egyptology, wanting to study the Kabbalah, wanting to study magic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a lifelong study.
That's the thing I've most admired about the Tarot. You can't just say, okay, I look at the cards, I know what they mean, that's it. It's not gin rummy. The symbolism on them is so thick. There are times that you've shown me a card and said, well, you see this stick and how he's walking, you see where the dog is and he's looking up. I didn't see any of this. You know, I saw certain things, but the depth of these is incredible. And I think that's the deck that most people, when you say Tarot, they see in their brain, they see the Rider-Waite deck.
And so I think I have a deck up here that's, I'll show you, much older. This is the Visconti deck. And this is some of the original Italian. This is a reproduction. But this is some of this, I think, is too shiny. But these are like some of the pictures. I can't really see.
Oh, they're very lush. Very lush pictures. There is the recognizability. I can see the Rider-Waite in them. I just see another artist's hand.
Right. These are paintings that were put onto paper. And people used to play a game called Tarocchi. In Europe, all through Europe, actually. And it started in Italy and it ended up in France and changed as it went along, of course. But this was, I'm fuzzy because I tucked my camera's having a freak out because I went too close to it. It'll calm down. But this was a game that people played, and specifically people played it who were royalty or nobles. This was a game of just like cards. It was like a gambling game, actually. So it wasn't anything spooky or weird or strange. It was just a card game with some gambling involved. So that's how it started. But then they painted pictures on the cards, and those became somehow, when we have the Ordo Templis Orientis, the OTO comes along into Europe, or maybe in like the late 1800s, and they start to infuse things that the Freemasons or the Rosicrucians these are secret societies, were using a lot of symbolism, ancient symbolism in their work. These somehow ended up in the cards, or the cards were shown to represent these things accidentally, maybe on purpose, maybe they're ancient magic, maybe they're not, nobody knows for sure. And one thing led to another, and then this deck, the Rider-Waite Smith deck, came along, and people started to really recognize that perhaps the cards do have magical symbol power in them, but mostly because they put it there. I have to say that too. That was not in the original decks at all.
Wow.
And even the original decks can be used as a way to go into a psychic realm. I mean, any deck can do. There's other decks out there that are not tarot that you can use to fortune tell. Or like I said, I use regular playing cards. It doesn't really matter. It's just a matter of jogging the mind to get you to see things perhaps you wouldn't see in the mundane world, if that makes any sense.
You're giving me chills because I realize you're talking about an elitist card game, and suddenly someone would etch something on it and it becomes permanent with the card. And then someone would put in this and it becomes permanent with the card. These cards came to life.
Right.
These cards actually had their own existence. Now, let's walk through this. I come to you for a card reading. I shuffle the deck, you tell me exactly how to shuffle the deck, and then I put it down and you pick up the cards. What do you do from there?
It depends. It depends on the question you're asking. Oh, I'm less fuzzy now. That's good. It depends on the question you're asking. It depends. If you're asking a relationship question, I might go ahead and do a spread of cards that represent relationship, or I might just do something that's a real famous spread of cards called the Celtic Cross.
Right.
I might do something that's three card, went before, during, and after kind of a thing, or a yes or no answer a question that's more specific. That's kind of how I do that. It depends on the person and what they need, really. And sometimes I freestyle it. Sometimes it just, I'm just going to lay down cards immediately. Some people will come in such a frenetic state that I got to get those cards on the table as fast as possible and start reading for them because they're in a very heightened emotional state. So it depends. That's the answer to that. It depends on the question and the circumstances.
I want to get into in terms of how you interpret. Now, you said about asking a question. Let's say you get a real skeptic, and I used to be a real skeptic like me, who says, here's the cards. What's the question? You tell me.
I can't read a person like that. I refuse to read a person like that.
Why is that?
Because if you don't answer, or you don't participate, I can't help you. We're a team. It's not me telling you like some spooky thing in a movie. We're a team, right? So a team works together, obviously. And if you have needs for answers, then you participate. There are people, I will always say to them, you do not have to tell me specifics, but is this happening? Right? You do not have to tell me who, but I see this person. Do you know who that is? You don't have to tell me. Because, you know, I've had instances where people have come to me and I've uncovered the fact that they're having affairs. And they were none too happy about me saying it out loud, you see? So, some other strange things like thievery or, getting fired for stealing and stuff like that. So I try not to say those things to people ever, too. I try to say, is this about your work? Did something pretty bad happen? Was there a liar involved? Or did you lie about something that maybe you didn't mean to? I have to be very cautious with people about how I say things. And I never, ever read a person who's closed down. Never. It's not worth my time.
Okay, so you get someone who's open. And okay, so I come to you, I shuffle the deck and I said, I want to find out what's going to happen on a business venture that I'm looking into for the near future. Is that enough of a question for you?
Yeah, that's enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you put down the spread, you decide which spread works. Let's say you put down the Celtic Cross, as you say. What do you do from there? How do you look at these cards and answer my question?
Yeah, well, each person, let's say you use, for example, not everybody knows what we're talking about, but I'll try to make it easy to understand. This spread, a spread on the tarot, each one of those places generally mean a thing to the reader, right? So you lay down a card that could mean, oh, that represents you, the person. Here's another card. This is what's in your way, what's stopping you. Here's another card. This is what the influence is around you. What are you thinking? What have you manifested, et cetera, et cetera. So each placement has a specific meaning. That's not freestyle. Freestyle could be, hey, boom, boom, boom. Hey, are you in trouble? Is this the thing? In a business venture, I might say, oh, okay. Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. And oh, here's, oh, do you have a problem with the bank, your bank account? Is there a loan involved? Is there such and such and such? You know, so that might be different. But if you're reading something like you mentioned, the Celtic Cross or a relationship spread, each one of those particular places, and people can look those up on the internet very easily. There's tons of them. And there's actually two or three really good books out on Amazon and on and in free sites for download as PDFs that talk all about different kinds of spreads. So if you're interested in those, you can find those on the internet pretty easily and start working with those. And that's the guideline. You know, you go, okay, I have a choice. Do I want to read free or do I want to read this person in some kind of a parameter? And that would be what those spreads represent. Does that make sense?
Yes, completely. It fascinates me because I'm not sure what you pluck on each or your own individuality. I've seen you read cards sometimes and you would say something and I would be absolutely brilliant. One that always comes to mind is you were reading cards for someone and you put down a card, you looked at them, you looked at the card again and again, and then you said, did your husband leave you? And the woman was upset and she said, no, he did not. He's a wonderful man. Da, 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 da. And after her diatribe, she said, he passed away. And so, yes, he did leave her.
Right, right.
What do you see? This is a very silly question. Maybe this is very laymanistic to ask. What do you see in the cards when you put them down? What do you see in them that makes you come up to those hypotheses? Is it just a gut reaction, or do you look at a certain symbol comparing to that person, comparing to what they want? What gives you your answers?
There's a lot of math involved. There's a lot of understanding, again, what the symbols are. So like, for example, one of the cards called the Fool card, there's a little white dog. And that dog means a whole lot of stuff, okay? So you knowing what that means, and then the rest of what those symbols in the card mean helps, really. So you can actually read a person with one card if you really want to concentrate on that one card. It's a matter of math. It's a matter of like, oh, there's this card and in relation to this card, and then there's this one. So I'm seeing this, but I don't see. See, now there's different kinds. I'm actually psychic in a lot of ways, but I'm not so much a visual psychic. I'm not clairvoyant. I don't see, I hear. So I'm a person who hears a thing. So I say to people, oh, I hear the cards are saying blank, blank, blank. Or I hear this thing, I can't resist this. I had one time, I got a card up for a woman and it was a simple card that doesn't always mean this, but I said, did you have a miscarriage or did you have an abortion? And she started to cry and she was like, how did you know that? Did somebody tell you? I'm like, no, it's here in this card and I see this here with this little symbol. And for some reason, I just felt that that was what it was, you know? And that's what I mean by having to participate, because if she was just sitting there with her arms crossed, I would have gotten nothing, you know, and the rest of that reading proceeded to be about a healing from a miscarriage. So that's why people need to participate. And that's how you do that. It's like, I see this card and usually it means this thing, but I think it's this, and I'm going to say it. I'm going to ask the person what that is.
That's interesting. So if someone sits down and says, this is a relationship question about, you know, a romance I'm involved in or whatever. So that's your first basis. Then you look at the card and you look at the symbology compared to what they had said. And maybe even, you know, the like you said about them needing the cards dropped on the table immediately, et cetera. And you hear the answer.
Yeah, kind of hear it. Or it's almost a feeling too. I sort of feel, and that's part of being a good reader is being an empath. I know that's I hate that word. It gets passed around so often, you know, empath versus narcissist. It's all over the internet. But being empathetic, meaning that you can sit with a person and kind of take away your ego for a little while and just sort of feel with them. When you can feel with them, then you can speak about what you feel. Because most of the times what's happening, and I had this one tarot teacher, which is a funny story, maybe I'll tell later, but she used, what do you feel? What do you feel I'm feeling? What do you feel like I'm feeling? And I would be like, I think you feel blank. She'd be like, yes, you're right. That's it. So what is that person feeling? Why are they here? What is going on? What's this agitation I feel? What is that? And what if I felt what she feels or he feels, what would this card mean in that instance? Because when a person comes for a card reading, it's not the cards that are telling them anything. They're telling the cards. I believe it's their higher self with whatever you want to call it, their super consciousness, their whatever they're plugged into spiritually, speaking to them at that moment through the cards, that they have come for a card reading because this is going to speak to them. They're going to understand these picture symbols and they're going to get it that way. That's what I believe. It has nothing to do with me. I'm telling them what they already know.
Okay, now in terms of already know, do we need to, now we're talking about people who are closed off like this. What do we as your client in such a case have to do when we sit down and you are giving us this reading, and even as we're shuffling the cards, if you will, which is a huge ceremony for this, essentially, we need to be open, right? You mentioned that the hideous word ego. We need to be able to put that down and say, I want to really hear what is being said about this. So we need to be open to all this.
Right, of course. I have another teacher who I'm working with in astrology, and he was just saying that everything you say as a reader will stay with somebody for the rest of their lives. So on this side of the table, it's extremely important to be very cautious about what you say and how you say that. So, you know, I'm very clear about saying that I'm not going to tell people about death or destruction. I'm not going to do it because I could help them to manifest that. What I will do is give them warnings about watching out for such and such. Maybe take care of your health. Maybe don't go on that trip with that guy. You know, things like this. That's all I'll do. On the other side, that's the thing. I think it's to drop the misconceptions of stupid movies and television shows that show horror associated with what tarot can be, which is a healing psychologically and spiritually healing art. That's what it was. That's what it is. And anything else that gets put upon it is not true. Period.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's part of the reason I say, what do we have to do? So one thing we have to do is realize when something is a prop and realize when something is real. When we sit down and we get a tarot reading from you, we need to open our minds and say, this is something that could actually be. This is something I'm, as you said, manifesting. I already know what I need to do. Now I want to hear you hear me say it, if you will.
To interject, my mother, who was terrified and burnt my tarot cards in a barbecue, became one of my most adamant clients later on in my life. Okay. Whenever I saw her or my sisters or anybody in my family, they'd always say, hey, bring your cards all the time. And then I'd get dinner for it, you know?
There you go.
Yeah. She wanted her cards read because then she realized it wasn't evil. I wasn't hurting anybody. The way I was learning how to do it was as a helping tool, you know, for people. And she saw it as like a calling from God, and that I should work it out and do that. So there's no evil involved in it, like at all. Like, I mean, you know what? I will put in here this. This is my opinion. Take it as you will. There are people out there who are charlatans, right? They say, and I've seen them. I've been in places where people are laying down cards and I'm like, that's not what that means. You're making this up just to get attention, or you're making this up to get money. And that's where a lot of it, I worked for a woman who shall remain nameless, who wanted me to read cards in such a way so that I could make people buy her spells. That's what a lot of people do. They say, I have a bunch of aromatherapy oils and some candles and some glitter, and I'm going to make a fancy schmancy, you know, candle for you because I sense that there's a hex upon you and your husband. You must pay. And then they get them to come back. Oh, it didn't work, but it didn't work. Oh, let's read the cards again and make sure we got it right. And they come back and they come back and they put fear in them. So I had a reading just last week with a woman who was so suspicious of me that, because she thought for sure I was going to ask her to buy some of my, I do make magical products, right? So she thought for sure I was going to ask her. I never ask anybody. I'll say to them, do you want to learn how, or do you want me to make it for you? And if you do, no pressure, you know, really no pressure. Go look at my Etsy thing and let me know what you want. I really am not there to take your money, you know, besides for the reading, obviously. She was so suspicious. She finally, at the end of the reading, said, all right, tell me what to do. Still didn't trust me. All right, tell me what to do. Tell me how to make stuff. So I did. I said, here's this book. Here's this book. Here's this book. Here's this book. Here's this video. Bump, bump, bump. I gave her about 20 things to do. Now, whether or not she will, But that's what it is the wall comes up because people think you're a manipulator, you're here just to make money. And that's because of, quote, gypsy fortune tellers that are not even Romani people. They're just make-believe something. And other types of make-believe witches that come up and take advantage of people. I've also seen people reading tarot cards. I sat in awe saying, how do these people read cards on YouTube for masses of people that they don't even see? How does somebody sit down and say, I'm going to read all Sagittarians in the whole planet with these tarot cards today, and it makes sense for everybody? It's these kinds of, and now give me money because I did that, you know, for you, for free, you know, on the internet. That's what causes problems. That's what causes, and rightfully so, people should be suspicious. And I think what you need to do is interview your tarot reader before you have a reading. Ask them these questions. Be an informed consumer. What am I getting from my whatever dollars? What am I doing? Will you help me follow up? How long have you been reading? How do you read? Where have you read? Do you have references? I do. You know, that kind of a thing is doesn't seem to happen. People just sort of roll into a tarot reading with frightening, you know, with their mind in a jumble of fear because they think the devil is behind the curtain over here. And it's going to come out and get them. I think sometimes people do that just like they go on a roller coaster. I don't think they really care about the answer. I think they just want a thrill ride, you know.
That's interesting. Okay, and you brought up two other words, and we're going to talk about those. One of them, when you're saying about interviewing your tarot reader, we interview doctors. You know, we go to a doctor and we say, well, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? I interviewed someone yesterday who made a point of talking about his cardiologist, and he stayed with the cardiologist because he was the only doctor he ever had who simply asked him what he did for a living so that he could say, oh, that's a stressful job. So you need that. So we really, it sounds funny to say this. We can't look at it spiritually so much as we're going to a doctor, we're going to a physician, well, and we want to some other point.
Can I say that's what it was? I mean, that's what my great grandmother did. And that's what my grandmother did. You know, you went to a person you trusted to have the knowledge, and they would tell you the things they saw, and then you leave with that knowledge and you figure it out on your own when you get home, you know, over time.
Right.
So it is like going to it's like a shaman. It's shamanistic, let's put it that way. I go, and most good tarot card readers go on a shamanistic trip with their client, and they lead them. That's what it really is. You become like the leader, a Sherpa, a shaman in that. And that's so that you can shed light on a situation that people maybe don't want to see, or parts of their lives they don't want to look at. You can give it to them in pictorial form and an interpretation that they can take home. And sometimes they'll have dreams, or in 2 or 3 days they'll go, I get all this all the time. Was that guy a Gemini? Did you say Gemini? You know, that's what happens. They go home and they think about it, and it starts to, it's just like, listen, I've been, many of us have been, and I was in therapy for many, many years, and may still be again, but that's what a good therapist does. They sort of go, here, that's what I think, have a nice day. And you go home and freak out for a week, you know, and then to come back again. So that's kind of what tarot is. I'm not saying everybody has to come every week, you know, for a tarot reading, but you know, that's how it kind of works. It's sort of like, here, go think about these things. This is what I saw. You can now take it. And I want to interject also, a tarot reading is like a snapshot. It's a frozen in time moment. When you leave your tarot reader, you may not have the same circumstances because you've been changed during the reading somehow. So, you know, you've changed your mind, you've changed, something is changed or moved or shifted. So the next day could be a whole new life. The next 5 minutes could be, in during a reading, things can change. I've had that happen where it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Now we have to change what we're doing because you just had a big light bulb moment. Now we have to look at that. You know, so it's frozen in time. It is not for the rest of your life at all. And anybody who tells you that, they just want your money so that they can make spells. I'm telling you, that's true.
Now, that's the other word I was going to talk about. But it's rather funny and ironic that you're talking about how the future changes. There's what's called the Heisenberg principle, where so many things change constantly that to really foretell the future is almost impossible.
Exactly.
But it's interesting. Yes, we will listen to a therapist who is just some person who studied for a while, who's going to say, well, you know, because you scratched your nose on that and because you look tense and whatever, maybe you should think about, we do that there and we have no problem. And you're right. How many people will go, oh, I can't be with him. Why, he's a Libra. And they have no idea. They just know, you know, what they've read in the newspapers almost about the horoscope. Let's take a little bit huge word that you had said, God. I remember you were once preparing a candle for someone, and I found it so funny. She ardently came over and said, could you do this for me? And whatever, I buy money or something. I don't remember why she wanted it, but there you were carving it and putting on all these brilliant oils and aromas and everything. And in the middle of it, in a dead silence, she looked at you and said, am I going to go to hell for this? Now, there are people who poo-poo the tarot because they went to somebody once or twice or 100 times who was a charlatan. Once as a gag, I can't even tell you how many years ago, must be about 30 years ago, I went to a reader and I said, tell me about my son. And she described this boy down to the letter and I smiled and said, thank you so much and left. I was actually talking about my dog.
I would wonder if, though, now you have a stepson, I wonder if she was right.
You just silenced me for a moment, and that's majestical to do. I'm going to try to think about exactly what she said, and
eventually you had a son. So.
Okay, all right, you're scaring me. The first part is the charlatan who pushes people away from believing it. What do you say to that person who is religious enough that they believe this is the work of dark forces? What do you say to them?
Okay, I was like, prove it. Prove it. Prove it that there's something dark in this, because how is there? Nobody got harmed. That's a bit major thing to me. Nothing happened to anyone. Nobody gets harmed. Nobody manipulated you. Nobody stole from you, lied to you. Nobody did anything to you. It was an exchange of information for money, usually, sometimes other things. And that's it.
I'm glad you said that again. Nobody was harmed. I won't say which movie it was. I won't say whatever, but one of the characters in this film pulled up the death card. And of course someone died. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the death card, because that's the scary card that they use in every horror movie.
There's other ones, but okay, we'll go with that one.
Yeah. Oh, the tower's a scary card. There's so many others that you could say that, but the death card's this obvious thing, but it doesn't mean death, does it?
It can mean death, because death is a total change of a situation. So what it does mean is that a brand new thing is going to happen. Everything you know is going to change pretty drastically, pretty quickly, and something new is going to come up. It's rebirth, because all death is rebirth. If you believe in the afterlife, you believe you're going to heaven. That's another life. If you believe in reincarnation, you're going to another life, right? So that's why, or if you're a plant and you're dying and your seeds go into the ground and another plant comes up in the spring, that's, again, death and rebirth, right? And there's all kinds of gods from the beginning of time till probably now still being created about dying and resurrecting, you know, gods. Like Jesus is one of those examples, right? Dying and resurrecting God. So that's really kind of what it means. It just means a change. Yeah, it could mean death. I've had cards read and a person just had a death in their life. And I knew for sure that that card also represented, say, their father's passing, as well as the transition they go through because of their father's passing. You see?
Now it could also mean a death of a job, a death of no longer in a particular situation, you're moving into another new situation. It could be that simple.
But the rule, A1 rule of tarot card reading, I believe, and many others do, you don't say that to people. You don't say, oh, you're going to die. I think so. Because that, again, is like I said before, you know, they'll take that with them and they just might manifest that. And that's
right.
And then it's up to you. Then you're the one to be suffering for that.
Well, that's the hypnosis of the newspaper horoscopes. Mm-hmm. Someone reads their horoscope and it says, you're going to trip and fall today.
Right.
And they're going to do everything they can to trip and fall on that day. I'm getting the notion of the law of attraction,
right?
From this, it's the sense that act as if you think you're going to fail, guess what? You're going to fail. But if you think you will succeed, if your outlook is bright, then in so many ways you're going to succeed.
Right.
Great New York Times article about as of today, our former president, where he was, they said he was not a good businessman, but he played a good businessman beautifully. So he acted as if.
Right.
So we need to be open to this. We need to understand that this is just therapy. This is just a conversation. This is not evil, and we're not dying because of it.
No, and it's a tool. And I think that, you know, with talking about therapy, it depends on the amount of time your reader has read. They will know more things the longer they've done it. And also, you also want a reader who understands, like I said, all those symbols and understands astrology and numerology and color techniques and the Kabbalah and ancient Egyptian. You have to know these things at least somewhat on the surface. When I teach my tarot card classes, they're always telling me, oh my God, there's so much. I'm like, yes. So now go figure it out. So now you go to an astrology class, or now you go to a this class or that class, and then you learn more. You become a better tarot reader. Plus, I really think tarot readers need to read for themselves, read all the time for themselves, work on themselves all of the time. You cannot help other people if you're not in good shape. And you also should be going to other readers and having readings and or therapists and massage therapists and sound healers and all these other things to keep healing yourself and keeping the channel clear. Otherwise, you're not going to be a really good tarot card reader. So when you're asking for a tarot reading, make sure you check out the reader and ask them, like I said before, questions. You know, where did you learn? How long did you study? Blank, blank, blank.
Well, it's like we said before, if you can interview your doctor, if nothing else, go online and check them out. Then, yeah, you need to do the same thing there.
Right.
You're talking about massage therapy. You're talking about homeopathic ways. How does tarot fit into that? When we talk meditation, massage, Reiki, when we talk of all these things,
right,
where does tarot fit into that age, that scheme?
If a client is open to it, I think it'd be a good way to go into healing. I think that if you come to somebody who's a healer, which I happen to be too, mm-hmm. You can say, let's have a reading and let's see, have a reading about your health. Let's do that. You know, let's see where maybe this illness this has manifested from. Let's talk about that. What's the spiritual and mental portion of your illness? And then we'll see how we're going to approach what we do, what modalities we might use for you. We could do this with astrology as well. And a lot of people do medical astrology. So that's another way. And it's like a doorway in that kind of guides you. And it's also a doorway in if you're really interested in using magic. Now, let's not get into that because that's another whole 5 hours. But you know, to use magic, or you wanted to have candles, or have somebody make you maybe a bath or an incense, a reading can really help you understand which way you go with that as well. So that's, you know, that's the doorway open. It's a door to the opening.
Now, this may sound very funny. People, for tarot readers and for people just wanting a reading, how important is it to understand the other parts of this, to understand meditation, to understand Reiki, to understand astrology? How important for the reader to know these things?
I think extremely important. I think when I first started reading cards, of course, I was a child and I knew just how to be Catholic, you know, and I knew nothing else spiritually at that time. And eventually I started to study all kinds of like things. And you can see there's some of the books here, you know, and I have about 700 books on my Kindle. It's a thank God for Kindles. They don't weigh that much, you know. It's a constant thing of learning. So yeah, I think it's extremely important. When I have students, that's one of the first things I tell them. One of them said to me, hey, can you let's do a class on the astrology of tarot. I'm like, okay, sure. But why don't you learn a little yourself first? I don't want to spoon feed you. Right? Why aren't you taking a class yourself? You know, if there's astrology in the tarot and you're called to it, then why aren't you at least making yourself familiar with it? You know, if there's numerology, which is not the hardest study there is on the planet, there's other things that are much more involved. But if there's numerology, and there is a lot in the tarot, then study that. You know, so it's very, very important. I think it's very important. Your readings only get better. And that's like asking, oh, hey, you know, your therapist, he just got out and he's got his doctorate and he's a psychologist, but he doesn't go to any more classes. He doesn't go to clinics. He doesn't study. He doesn't read the books and the magazines. And he's just the same way he was when he came out of college. Would you want to go see him? No.
Same. You want the grizzled sergeant to march you into war, not the brash young lieutenant.
There's nothing wrong with being a brash young lieutenant. I don't want that to be misconstrued, because it's okay to be a new reader. Those people are the most passionate. So that's good too. You know, they want to get it and trying to figure it out. But I'm saying, if you really have, you want to trust your reader or somebody you're going to go to often, just know that your reader is working towards their own openings and their own clearings and their own health. And by learning and by studying and by walking the path of spirituality. That's what I'm saying. And it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, you could be one of the three big religions, part of those, and study those and find mysticism in those, and there is, and it's beautiful. Or you could do it as an outlier and do Wicca or do Santeria or do other things that are a little unusual for the general public and study that way, like astrology, for example. So you want to be able to sit with a reader who, A1, is passionate, but also somebody that, you know, at least has studied some, or not somebody who's just got, or I have to take this back because my class will get mad at me. I want to say also, if you want to go to a new reader, you're doing them a favor because they get to learn with you. And they may be entirely really weirdly wrong or not. But
and if you're smart enough as the subject, if you will, as the client, to understand the symbols, do you think that we as clients should understand enough symbols so when you put down a card, we can look at, when you say, okay, well, you see how the two pillars, one is black and one is white, and you see these symbols on here, well, this means we're able to understand that much more intrinsically?
Some people get that, and I do show cards, and I think most people like to see the cards. They do like to look at them, because they'll say to me, hey, what does that mean sometimes? You know, they'll see, and they should look. And we all know what black and white means. We know what yin and yang is. We all know these things. We all know, if I say the star, you know what a star is. You know what a high priestess might look like in Egypt. You know, we have these ideas in our head. You know, these are there. They're in our heads. But some people don't want to know. They don't want to see. Some people will tell me, I don't want to see. Just tell me. Because they get confused by the pictures. They don't want to know. It depends on the person in front of you, really. And I don't think it's your responsibility to know all these symbols. I think these are archetypes, and you know them already.
That's very true. There's before I understood the tarot, I'd look at a card, and at least I would get the general tenor of the card. At least I would figure out who the Hierophant is. I got it. Okay, now I think I understand what's going on.
You should tell people that you learned how to read cards.
Well, yeah.
Say 8 months too.
I know. And it was eye-opening, quite frankly. Even before that, like I said, I'd look at it and I would get the idea. Thank goodness for the class, because then at least I could formulate my idea into some form of reality with it. Mm-hmm. The three religions, the three main religions, it's easy in life to say, oh, I'm Christian, I'm Jewish, I'm Muslim. Well, let's not get political. It's easy to say it in general in life. A lot of people might not be interested in this, because to say that I'm looking at other spirituality, I'm looking at this, I'm trying meditation, I'm trying to read these cards, I'm studying and whatever else, sounds odd, you know, almost like the woman when she said, am I going to go to hell for that candle? What do you say to them about that blockage, about saying, oh, I can't tell people I meditate because that'll sound woo-woo to people? What do you say to them?
Well, they have to find it then in their religion, because all those religions have it. So there's great mystical traditions in all three of those religions, which are beautiful and very, very, very powerful. And if you follow them, you should be fine. You don't have to step outside of the place you feel comfortable. You don't. If you're on a path, say you're born Christian and you love it and you feel great in it, then do it. That's fine. You don't have to meditate. People pray. Praying is meditating. So, or people do all kinds of like different things in different religions that is meditation. If you look at the Muslims and the way they pray, that is total meditation, that is mass meditation. So fine, it doesn't have to be something you're afraid of at all. It doesn't have to be something you're not comfortable with. A lot of people I find they don't want to be told where to get their spirituality, right? So they may have been born into one of those religions, but they don't feel comfortable in them necessarily. So that's okay. That's not their path. That's all right. They don't have to disrespect that path, because the people on it sometimes are amazingly enlightened, superiorly enlightened, but they don't feel comfortable there. So it's okay to look outside of there and find a place you do feel comfortable. And that could be Buddhism. That could be, you know, Confucianism, that could be Wicca, that could be, you name it. There's a zillion religions out there, different paths to take, you know. So whatever finds your way, whatever you find that makes sense to you is the way to go. And if it's the religion of your origin, that's great too. Then it's already done. You don't have to worry.
And you could walk two paths. You could be a devout Christian and also still understand the tarot, meditation, astrology, etc. You could still understand all of that.
You can use them. Like I said, my mom was super, super Catholic. She should have been a nun. I don't know why she wasn't. So, you know, I don't. My father didn't either. So, okay. But she did find that it was fun to talk about astrology, and she did love to talk with, use these cards and think about these cards. And eventually she came around to talking about the wheel of the year and how nature moves and how it works, which is very pagan, you know, and she used it, but still remained Christian. I had a teacher who was extremely Wiccan, but also a devout Catholic. He was an Orthodox Russian Catholic, and he worked both ways. I have another friend who's an Egypt worshiper, but he also worships Jesus and is Catholic. So it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I don't find it matters. These people, would they need more than one thing? That's fine too. Whatever you need.
I know of whom you're speaking, and I remember, firstly, he was a very charismatic man. Alexei was a very charismatic man.
Yes, Alexei Kondratyev, that was his name. Yeah.
Thank you. I purposely took a breath, so knowing you'd fill in the last name for me. He was a very charismatic man. He was quite wonderful to listen to. And I knew him as this high priest within within this culture. But then at his funeral, there was this very Catholic group. There was the very pagan group, and somewhere in between was comic book and science fiction lovers, but that's another part of them. But even that, when you get right down to it, there's something interesting. We'll talk about that in a moment. You mentioned an interesting word, and I'm wondering how many people went, huh? What does it mean to be Wiccan?
Oh, Wicca. All right. Well, that's a long subject. But I'll tell
That'll be another whole episode. But just for those who when they hear the word witch.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the etymology of the word witch and the word Wicca. Okay, so Wicca, as a religion, was formed in the 1950s-ish by a man named, what's his name? Oh, see? Gerald Gardner.
Thank you.
In England. Okay, so he took a whole bunch of stuff. He said he was in a coven somewhere in a forest with a bunch of people. He mixed it in with a bunch of other things that he learned from Aleister Crowley, and that's another subject we can get into another day, and made this thing. Okay. So that's what Wicca is. But when it got to America, it's very interesting. He literally sent people out, and one of them came here. We'll talk about that another day. We'll get into Uncle Bucky and how that all happened. And they moved to Long Island, set up a coven, which is what it was called, because they went by the old fashioned witch words, right? And spread this stuff. So by the time the 1970-ish early 70s happened, New York City, California, San Francisco was bubbling up with lots of people who wanted to be witches. All these hippies were now witches, okay? And what happened, as happens in America, everything splintered, okay? People took what they wanted, they threw out what they didn't like, they made all these new traditions, and they kept calling it Wicca, and it's still Wicca. Wicca, 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 Wicca. So Wicca, the word, comes from the word to bend fate, to bend wood. It's called witche or wicke in ancient or medieval to earlier English, right? W-I-C-C-E, witche. And that's the word witch. Is somebody who can bend fate, change your mind, change your direction, help you to do such things. These people were midwives, herbalists, healers, shaman. That's who they were. They were the people who were in your world, who you'd go to, like my great-grandmother, and say, hey, my husband's cheating on me. What do I do, Rosalia? You know, and they would tell you. They would help you through. They would change your mind, change your direction, help you to change your husband, help you maybe to change your marriage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where the word comes from. It has been vilified by the Christian religion, specifically in Europe in the 1600s or so, 15 to 17 almost, where many, many, many people were burned at the stake for being what they called witches, who were not even witches. They were just women, for various reasons, were murdered. That's the truth. So that's, if you're interested in that and you want to know more about it, say, write to these people who may be listening, check it out. look it up. Go to etymology.com online and look it up, and it'll tell you the whole history. Get yourself into, even Wikipedia can give you good answers on that question.
It's rather ironic when you say about Wicca means to bend. I'm suddenly even thinking, we've seen this all our lives with wicker furniture, which is just this wood that has been shaped.
There you go.
So just to say that it is shaping us is it's fascinating on that level. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here were these healers, these shaman, these spiritual therapists. Why? And yes, we know they were vilified completely. Ironically, around that time was the first time that we've ever even discussed the word hell. Hell is not in the Bible. Hell is not eons old. Hell was created by Dante Alighieri in the Divine Comedy. So hell is a theatrical device. Why? And I'll say the church as an organization and not as a religion or whatever. Why did these people have to turn to these wondrous people who were just helping and say, you are now bad? Why did they need to or want to?
Well, it's very easy. There's different ways to look at it, but generally speaking, it's the oppression of women for the last 10,000 years. And mostly women did this work. And men wanted to do this work. They wanted to become doctors, and they formed these societies of doctoring, and they actually killed more people than anybody who ever did herbalism. But they wanted the money. They wanted the power, and the church wanted the money and the power. So if you went to your shaman and not to the priest to give him a donation for the church, well, then the money didn't go to the church or to the priest or to whomever. So, and a lot of it was women doing it too, because it was a female, it was kind of like a woman's job in a way, because women are sort of, well, not all, but many women are a little more attuned or maybe more intuitive than some men, you know. So it was women, you went to a woman more times, and women also were at birth and they were at deaths. They were responsible for both parts of life, you know. They were child rearers or raisers. They helped the sick. So these arts, there weren't maybe necessarily specifically just the witch of your town. You did it yourself as well. You know how to heal your family is the same as you knew how to cook for them.
Oh, of course. It was man's fear of woman. It was the male doctor's fear of competition. And what better way, especially around that time period, to, you know, nowadays, you get a real bad ad saying, don't vote for this person, they're terrible. But back then it was, so they made it demonic. If you did this, you're with the devil. You know, that thing that was just created about 100 years before.
Well, this is kind of notorious. Anytime anybody took over any lands, I think of the Romans as a good example, they take their religion of the time with them. And if you didn't listen to what they said or what they did or how they prayed or whatever they did, whatever rituals they performed, you were murdered. So you had to convert or die. So this is how it was. This is how it is. You don't want to convert. You mean you went to this woman, or you yourself have herbs in your house and you say incantations over them? Well, we have to hang you.
It's interesting you say that, because yes, and we adopt these ancient ways. For instance, I'm trying to figure out why Easter needs a bunny and an egg, and why it is even called Easter, considering why we celebrate the day. So you could see the underpinnings of the ancient ways still with us today.
Well, they can go on for hours about Sabbats, and that's something we could talk about in the future. But Easter is a Norse, Ostore is a Norse goddess of spring, and we have bunnies because they're fertile, and eggs because it's fertility, and the spring is about, you know, rebirth, and that's why we have a person dying and being reborn again and growing again, you know, as though he was the seed coming out of the earth. That's what it is.
Really brilliant. I'm wondering how many people say, hey, happy Easter, and they have no idea why it's called Easter. Now we're in a momentous day, and we can't very well say that this is just, you know, oh good, it's a victory. It's a paradigm shift, because while we're all saying yay Joe Biden, we're also saying yay Kamala Harris. And we are talking about the first female vice president. And if we look at political trajectories, as everyone will now once the smoke clears, are we looking at the first female president? So we're looking at a whole change in us. Do you think that this change is just there, or do you think eventually people are going to start opening themselves up to astrology much more, herbalism much more, and to the tarot? Do you think people are going to be open-minded and open-hearted and open-souled enough to understand those cards?
I have to say, this is very interesting. I have groups on Facebook. One is for tarot, one is for astrology, because different groups for different things. And in the past week or so, because of the election, I believe, I've had about 60 to 70 people apply to those groups, almost every single one of those groups. Because I think that people are realizing it's okay to try different things, and it's okay to claim your power. And almost every single one of those people that come into my groups is a woman. Single one. It's almost like Ms. Harris has opened the door to female power and to reclaiming that feminine power. She's pretty strong. I give her that. She's a strong woman, and she's a very intelligent woman and a beautiful woman. So she represents so many things for us, you know, as women. And I think that that's what's happening. I think women are saying, if she can do that, I can do it too. I want to reclaim. And it's a lot about reclaiming also the Me Too movement. And at that time too, from that time on, it's been a little more with people, but that is another reclaiming of our own bodies, of our own decisions, of our own ideas. And so I think women reclaiming herbalism and witchcraft and tarot and all kinds of healing arts now is based on that. And I work with different astrologers, and one of them is always going on about it's, you know, it's Lilith rising. Lilith was supposedly Adam's first wife, and it's the death of the patriarchy. It doesn't mean it's the death of men, not at all, or males in general. It just means that kind of restrictive guy in charge, may do what I say, macho stuff, like our ex-president, it doesn't fly anymore. You know, my generation of women was the first generation of women to graduate from college en masse. That was allowed to. And remember, we only have the vote for about 100 years or so, right? So it's nothing. It's a drop in history, right? Nothing. We had nothing to do with a lot of what this country is or became. Now we want that power. So women are looking to our female ancestors and saying, hey, you know, my great-grandmother did, I hear this all the time, my great-grandmother did that too. Oh, what's this? I'd like to give herbs to my children. Can I learn? You know, this is just like a big snowball that's growing and growing and growing now. And I think she's part of it. And I think that's why it happened. I think that's part of it.
It's really interesting as you're saying this. I'm imagining the tarot deck itself. When we started this, you were talking about the symbolism in it. And all the little pieces and how, you know, you put them together as a jigsaw, you look at them separately and whatever. The tarot has become a parable of life right now. It's like, yes, women are now saying, wait a minute, I want my power back. How can I get it back? Okay, there's this. It's like they're looking at the great tarot card of life and saying, wait, I'm going to look at all the symbols. I want this symbol back. So yeah, you're right. We're seeing this earth-shaking moment.
But don't forget the millennial generation, which is now it's starting to take its place and being in charge, is an educated group. Those women, those girls are taking advantage of feminism that was fought for by their grandmothers and mothers, and they're living in a happy space, happier space, and they do have power. And that's who's coming to my groups, people under 35, really.
Because they were born with the knowledge that they could.
Yeah.
They weren't born being whispered in their ear saying what kind of citizen they can be. No, they were told that they could do anything. They have that power.
Right.
It is obvious that you are not alone in your thoughts. I remember at one point after one of your podcasts, I had said something like, oh, that's great. And you said, oh yeah, I have viewers. And I thought, that's wonderful. How many viewers? And you said, oh, about 5,000. I was so happy and so thrilled at this.
10,000.
How much?
10,000, almost 10,000 downloads, yeah. And it's only very few of them on there because I don't have all that time. I would like to do more now, and I will. But I did some things about just, you know, Sabbats and how to and grow a magical herbal garden, little simple things like that, very light. And people want it. They want the information.
People, 10,000 people. That's who wants you.
All over the world, really. Ugh. In Canada, in Australia, New Zealand, all over the world. That wherever they get the internet, like wherever they can see it or hear it. And it's on Spotify, and that's how I know. It's free on Spotify, and people just listen. So
That was the second thing that made me jump up and down for joy. You then showed me the little map that your podcast shows, and you said, "Oh, you see this is where it is, and this." And I was so thrilled. I was thrilled on two levels: thrilled for you, obviously, and also thrilled because yes, this is a whole way of thinking that is it is pervading the world. It's not this secret thing. It's something quite amazing. And whether you look at it as something spiritual or you just look at it as act as if you have this outlook, if you look toward the future with strength, you could succeed. Either way, it's a powerful door that is swinging open, and I'm thrilled. You have about 87 websites and emails and everything like that. Please share with us how we can reach you, how they can get a tarot reading.
Oh.
It's a tarot, you convinced me. How they can get to know you and your work.
Okay, well, I have a website that's called The Magic Apothecary, apothecary.com. Just look it up. There's a few different ones that are similar, but just look for, it says white witchcraft, meaning not evil witchcraft, not black magic, but light magic.
Right.
Light witchcraft. That sounds silly. It sounds like, you know, light soda, but
okay. Light witchcraft, less calories.
It's very, yeah, less calories. Let's smoke. Yeah. So there's that. And I have on Facebook, also The Magic Apothecary is a very big page. There's about 8,000-9,000 people in that one. Plus we have, I have an astrology for beginners group, a tarot for beginners or tarot for beginners group. I have a Reiki group. I have, what else do I have? Oh, a pagan path group that would just sort of study just paganism in general. And a few other things, including a medicine woman site. And of course I teach voice, there's that too. But again, I do use this in my voice lessons. I want to say that's important. My students are very funny. I had a student on Thursday who said to me, "So you do other things besides the singing thing, right?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, what do you want?" And he said, "Well, what can you use to help me calm my mind, to center myself so I can sing better?" I'm like, "Okay. Let's try this. And I have had students come, a lot of them, many of them, for tarot card readings or astrology readings. And it helps them in their vocal direction, in their lives direction. And sometimes it helps them decide, you know, whether or not they even just want to be, they want to be singers really or not, or which kind of singing they should pursue. So that comes into play. This, if you talk about tarot in general, yes, I do tarot I have done that for my voice students and for other people in the theater. And of course, people in the theater are always needing, they always want readings. That's important to actors. So they want readings and they want information and they will come for those as well. And I'm good at doing that from that point of view because I am a performer. And so I can see from that point of view as well.
You use that even in your own workings. Like you're able to, you once said you heal with your music.
Right.
So when you sing and whatever, you understand that the joy that you're giving to them, that is a form of healing. It's not
Absolutely.
Just entertainment.
Absolutely. It's not just for me to be stared at. I'm not there for that at all. I'm there as a channel for the goddess. That's how I feel about it. Other people may say God or whatever they say, but I feel like I'm a channel for the goddess. That's why I'm on the stage. That's why she gave me the voice I have. That's why she gave me the power to perform the way I do and speak the way I do so that people can hear her. So when you go to hear me, you hear her. I even did a show last year, a year ago, just now on the 26th of October, it was called Between the Moon and the Sun. And that was about my journey to this realization that maybe I should follow this path at an earlier time. It was talking about my early 30s into that portion of time when I really started to discover this work, which Wicca, anyway, that part of it.
And we're all thrilled that the fates have led you to that direction. Your show is brilliant.
Thank you.
You on stage is absolutely brilliant and commanding. And playwright Doug DeVita said he has never seen anyone so vulnerable on stage. Mm-hmm. And I completely understand what he means by that. And the fact that you're able to open up this door for us, I'm going to call you one of the originals, because when I teach the arts, I make a point of saying that the theater began as the religion for the Greeks, that it was the retelling of their gods and their gods' adventures that was their religion and their art form, their theatrical work. And we remember it because they even had contests. So the most enthralling play was the one that they published, or at least, you know, at that point, just archived so that we could see it today. And you do that today. You are a spiritual performer. You bring us amazing work. And then you open your heart and soul and help us be better people. So we can go and sit and watch your amazing work.
Or make your own amazing work, which is really my goal. Yeah. Get up and do it yourself too. And whatever way you can do it.
There you go.
My goal.
There you go. Mary, thank you. Thank you very much. It's marvelous that we're able not only to instruct, but to dispel fake news about the tarot and about spirituality and everything like that. So you are once again in just chatting with us. You're opening yet another door for so many people. Thank you. Thank you so much, and be well, and I'll see you around.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to chat with Mary about anything that was discussed here, if you want to talk to her about a card reading or anything like that, Mary, what's the best email address?
The magical MAGICAL apothecary APOTHECARY, the magical apothecary @gmail.com.
Okay, so there's the big thing to remember. If you're going to look up websites and things like that, it is the Magic Apothecary. But if you need the website, it's the Magical Apothecary.
It could write to you, I would assume, through this group.
Almost definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, if you can't remember if it's magic or magical, send a note to jmcommnet@gmail.com. jmcommnet@gmail.com. And say, please, that beautiful lady with the tarot cards, can I please chat with her?
You can reach out to me on Facebook, just, you know, instant, you know, private message me there or in one of my groups, or you can private message Jay that way too. That's fine.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Mary Elizabeth McCary on Facebook.
Facebook, right.
So you can definitely find her there. Thank you again. And I'm going to let you go because I know you have another class tonight where your students are actually going to read people. So
yes.
It's sort of their final exam.
Their final exam today, yes.
All right. Well, I'm volunteering. If someone wants to do my cards, please. I have this business venture and I want to find out what's happened. Anyway, thank you so much. Be well and keep enlightening all of us.
Thank you.
Ciao.